hi everyone, thanks for coming today. My name is Catherine Boudreau and I'll be presenting one of the studies I conducted as part of my doctoral thesis. The study is called Self-Help Treatment for At-Risk and Pathological Gamblers, Results from an Efficacy Study. So this study was made possible by a grant from the main research funding agency in Quebec, the Fonds de Recherche du Québec, Société Culture. So for the presentation today, I'll basically go over the study background and tell you about the treatment and the main results that we got from this study. So to start with, I'll go through an overview of just a few concepts regarding problem gambling and help seeking. Gambling disorder, as you probably know, is, according to DSM-5, a persistent and recurrent problematic gambling gambling habits that lead to clinically significant impairment or distress. Besides gambling disorder, problem gambling is often defined on a continuum. So for instance, most gamblers will show no gambling problem at all, whereas some will experience some consequences from their gambling habits and they'll be called at-risk gamblers. And for those with the most severe consequences will be called pathological or disordered gamblers. For the purpose of this study and the presentation today, both at-risk and pathological gamblers will be defined as problem gamblers, and they were the targeted population for this study. Now, even though gamblers will struggle with an array of negative consequences from their gambling habits, what we notice is that actually very few gamblers do seek help. In fact, U.S. and Canadian survey data tells us that around 12% of at-risk gamblers and around 6 to 29% of pathological gamblers will ever seek help. And now, when we look into this phenomenon and try to understand, well, what are the main barriers and why is it that gamblers do not seek help? What we come across in the help-seeking literature is that gamblers are ashamed of their problem and wish to handle the problem on their own. And for that reason, they will delay the moment that they will seek help. In fact, most gamblers ask for help when they've hit rock bottom. That is when financial distress, financial problems and distress reach their peak. And now, as a way to overcome those barriers and try to make the treatment better suited to individual needs, the self-help treatment format has been introduced and applied to problem gambling treatment as a way to try to overcome these barriers and adapt treatment to gamblers and their needs. So when we talk about self-help treatment, we usually talk about a workbook or some therapeutic material that's available online and some form of minimal therapist contact. Whether it be by chat or over the phone, for instance. Most self-help treatments available right now are based on cognitive behavioral approaches or motivational approach, or sometimes a combination of both. According to randomized controlled trials applied to problem gambling treatment, this type of intervention could reduce problem gambling severity as well as gambling habits. However, a recent literature review, from Swan and Hodgins points out that the improvement that we that in these studies we often also see some improvement in the control conditions, which leaves us wondering: well, is the self-help treatment really beneficial, or are we only witnessing some kind of natural recovery process? And also, what we notice in these studies is that usually the comparison with the control group never occurs beyond an eight-week period, which leaves very little time for gamblers to actually put into place some significant changes. So we could think that a comparison at a later time point would help us clarify the benefits of this kind of treatment. So even though the literature on self-help treatments is promising, and it seems like a good way to help gamblers, they'll still need some thorough assessment to do on the efficacy of this kind of treatment. And well, as you probably have guessed, this is the main purpose of this study. So in this study, the aim was to assess the efficacy of a self-help treatment to reduce problem gambling severity and gambling habits compared to a waiting list condition. Now, the program that was evaluated here is called Je Me Questionne. So it's the treatment program that was validated in with a French-Canadian sample. It contains three motivational telephone interviews that are spread over an 11-week period. And it also contains a cognitive behavioral workbook that people complete by themselves at home. And we suggested a treatment duration of about 11 weeks for participants to complete their workbook, but they were really encouraged to complete it at their own pace. And well, this program was adapted from a feasibility study that was conducted by La Douceur and colleagues, and that was published last year. So I'll go over the research hypothesis. So what was expected is that after 11 weeks, the treatment group compared to the waiting list group would show a significant decrease in the following outcome variables. So we expected a decrease in the number of DSM-5 gambling disorder criteria. We also expected a decrease in gambling frequency and time and money spent gambling. It was also expected that the treatment group would show a significant increase in self-efficacy after completing the treatment. And lastly, it was hypothesized that the improvements showed by the treatment group at week 11 would be maintained throughout the follow-ups that were conducted 1, 6, and 12 months later. So now here you have a diagram representing the flow of participants throughout the study protocol. So 138 people were assessed for eligibility. Out of these people, 76 were excluded for not meeting inclusion criteria. And so 62 people enrolled in the study and were allocated either to the treatment group or the waiting list control group. So 31 people in each group. As you can see, 4 people dropped out of the study before the week 11 assessment, and some more people dropped out of the study from the treatment group during the follow-up period. But even though some people dropped out of the study, everyone was included in the analysis. Here, just to give you an idea of the sample, so of the 62 people who took part in the study, first of all, no significant between group differences were found on any of the socio-demographic variables. So I'll just describe the sample as a whole. 61% of the sample were men. The mean age was 51 years old. Around half were single, and around half were also high school graduates or had lower education. Around half were employed and had a gross annual income of $40,000 per year or less. And what is important to mention here is that 87% of the sample identified video lottery terminals as their main problematic gambling activity. Here, I'll just give you a brief description of what the workbook that we use contains. So the Je Me Questionne workbook, like I said before, is a cognitive behavioral workbook. It is divided in 5 treatment phases, so each phase basically targets one treatment component. So first of all, in the first phase, it is really a motivational one where the gamblers are invited to really think about their gambling habits and how much it affects their lives, and to think about the consequences. In the second phase, it is really a behavioral one. So the gamblers are invited to identify their high-risk situations and figure out ways to better deal with them. In the third phase, gamblers have to decide whether they want to reach a control gambling goal or an abstinence goal, and we also provide some psychoeducation elements about gambling. So for instance, how some information about the notion of randomness and how the slot machines work and stuff like that. And in the fourth phase, this is really the cognitive restructuring phase of the workbook. So gamblers have to identify and try to change their gambling related thoughts, the one that lead them to gamble. And lastly, the last phase of the workbook targets relapse prevention. So it's basically a conventional CBT treatment, but that's adapted into a self-help format. I'll just go briefly over the procedure of this study. So like I mentioned before, all participants first went through a screening to assess for their eligibility. Eligible participants then completed an initial assessment where we could assess all the main outcome variables. And then the participants allocated to the treatment group then received their first motivational interview by phone. And once this was completed, then the workbook was mailed to them, and two other motivational interviews were conducted 3 and 8 weeks later. During the same time intervals, the waiting list control group also received phone calls, but those phone calls were neutral, so they did not include any motivational components. After an 11-week period, all of the participants then completed another evaluation to again assess for the main outcome variables. And then the treatment group entered the follow-up period, and the control group received their intervention. Just a little brief overview of the statistical analysis that were conducted. So the main approach that we used was the linear mixed model, because this statistical approach allows to make use of all the available data on each subject, and is also unaffected by randomly missing data. So to test for the first two hypotheses of the study, that is the one concerning the treatment outcome or efficacy, we conducted repeated measures of analysis of variance on each outcome variable to test for effects of time, effects of group, and also an interaction between time and group. Actually, the interaction effect between time and group is the one that we were really interested in to determine the treatment efficacy. And to test for the third hypothesis, the one regarding the follow-ups, we again conducted repeated measures analysis of variance to test for a time effect, so to see whether there were any changes between the week 11 assessment and then in the follow-ups. So here we have a graph representing the main outcome variable, the number of DSM-5 gambling disorder criteria. So in blue, you have the treatment group, and in red, the waiting list group. So what we got for this variable is a significant interaction time per group effect, basically meaning that a significant decrease in the number of DSM-5 gambling disorder criteria for the treatment group between the initial assessment and the week 11 assessment, and whereas the control group showed no significant improvement. And at week 11, both groups are also, there's also a significant difference between both groups. And as for the follow-ups, well, no significant differences were found between the week 11 assessment and the follow-ups for the treatment group, meaning that the changes that we, the improvement that we had at week 11 was maintained throughout time. What's interesting to see here, in fact, is that most gamblers from the treatment group were pathological gamblers when they entered the treatment program, because the diagnostic threshold is 4 criteria out of 9. And so what we see here is that most gamblers were pathological gamblers when they got into the treatment, and with the proper therapeutic material and some help by a therapist, some minimal help by a therapist, they managed to go below this threshold in about 11 weeks, which is quite a short period of time. So this means that the gamblers were able to put into place a lot of changes by themselves and to maintain those changes throughout time. Now, as for the monthly gambling habits that were also outcome variables that we looked at, I won't spend too much time on it, because what you can see is pretty much the same pattern as the other outcome variable. So what we got for the gambling habits is our significant time per group interactions in favor of the treatment group. So on the left, you have the money spent gambling per month. And on the right, you have the gambling frequency. And I'll just switch to present you the time spent gambling. So as you can see, it's the same pattern on every variable. So showing a significant decrease between the initial assessment and the week 11 assessment for the treatment group. And no significant changes were noted for the control group. those those results make sense actually with the treatment components that are found in the workbook. Gamblers are encouraged to work on them work on their finances and make a budget and figure out ways to better set their limits and better control their gambling habits. So it makes sense that during the 11-week period, they manage to better control their gambling habits and reduce that. Now for the self-efficacy, the self-efficacy here was evaluated on a scale from 0 to 10. So 0 basically means that the gambler is not confident at all that he can control himself regarding his high-risk situations, whereas 10 out of 10 means that the gambler feels totally confident to control himself regarding his high-risk situations. So what you can see, again, is pretty much the same pattern. So a significant time per group interaction effect in favor of the treatment group. So the self-efficacy from the treatment group significantly increases from initial assessment to week 11, and it remains similar then throughout the follow-ups. Now just an overview of the appreciation of the program by the participants, actually by the 27 participants who completed the 11-week assessment. All participants pretty much appreciated the workbook as well as the motivational interviews. They were really well-liked components. And some participants also pointed out that they appreciated the awareness that the program brought in, how it allowed them to really think of how much their gambling problem affected their lives. And as for the satisfaction regarding results with the program, 41% indicated that they were moderately satisfied, and 56% said they were highly satisfied with the program and with the results they got from it at week 11. And as for the workbook completion, well, around 29% of the sample had completed it at week 11, and around 70% of the sample had completed their workbook at month 12 follow-up. Now, just to wrap up on the results and conclude in a few remarks, Will has hypothesized the results that we got from this study tell us basically that the self-help treatment appears as an effective intervention to reduce problem gambling severity and gambling habits, and also to improve self-efficacy. Those results actually are in line with other self-help gambling treatment studies, and will support the fact that self-help treatments can be an interesting treatment alternative for gamblers. In fact, what we see here is that the interventions seem to have been well suited to the gamblers, because even though the therapist contact ended after the 11-week period, most gamblers remain involved in their treatment and continue to complete their workbook. So it seemed that this sort of treatment modality was really well fitted to their needs. One thing that must be mentioned also is the very low dropout rate of 13% at week 11, which is much lower than other addiction and treatment studies. We could think here that the flexibility of the treatment, again, and the study design helped to the retention of clients in the program. One limitation that must be mentioned is that the research team was not blind to the treatment, the study conditions, which may of course have introduced some kind of bias in the study. And now just to conclude on a few recommendations for future studies. Now that we see that this treatment modality is an effective one and is adapted to gamblers, we could now think of maybe adapting it into an online intervention and see if we come up with the same kind of results. And also, like I mentioned earlier, the sample contained mostly video lottery terminal gamblers, which makes it difficult to generalize to other types of gamblers. So we could now try to see if self-help treatments also works well with other types of gamblers, for instance, poker players, since we know that they may not be the same population. So that's about it. Thank you. Thank you. do the questions at the end? Or?
Yeah, do one. Yeah.
Okay.
Do
one.
We could do the questions while I set up my computer.
We do have plenty of time. Okay. Does anybody have any questions?
Yep, sir. It was conducted in Quebec, Canada, with the French Canadian symbol. For the moment, the treatment is not accessible. We're actually working on making it as a part of the treatments offered in our public health system in Quebec. So this is what this treatment is meant to fit in. So we're right now, once the efficacy has been assessed, we're working to making it accessible to people in Quebec because it's been only validated in French. So we would have to work on an English version to... Thank you. Yes? If I collected data on mood or self-esteem. The depressive symptoms were assessed. They were not reported as an outcome variable here. We took a look at depressive and anxiety symptoms, but the idea was really to include self-efficacy as an outcome variable since it is... Known to increase and to help change in cognitive behavioral treatment, but no, we did not look at self-esteem though. Could have been interesting to do so, however. Yeah. How this information? The gambling habits was self-report. We would actually, all evaluations were conducted over the phone, and we would just basically document the DSM-5 gambling criteria, the gambling habits, and all other types of outcome variables, yeah.
Did you gather any collateral information, so maybe a significant...
Yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, we did not do so because the idea of self-help treatment is to ensure confidentiality. I had a lot of gamblers that were really concerned with that, and it was complicated sometimes to call at home and reach them because they didn't want me to reach their wife or something like that. So we chose not to include any collaterals to just ensure that people would feel the confidentiality was preserved. Yeah. Yes. Hi. We screened for anxiety and depressive symptoms and also alcohol problems. But we ended up with quite a pure sample of gamblers, so not a lot of comorbid disorders. Yeah. We did not. We really just compared both treatment conditions, but I did not look at... Single individuals. No.
I'm actually doing a presentation for Roberta Bolton.
did think of wearing a skirt today, you know, to try and pass myself off as her, but didn't want her to look bad. She wasn't able to come today because our management has decided that they're limiting the amount of travel that the counselors can do. So I was here already, so I decided I'd present for her. Let's see. Roberta came to me about, 3 years ago and said she had this interest in, she was developing a workbook and developing a program to meet unique needs of women who are having gambling problems. And it follows a lot from her earlier work on her what she calls her voices study with Bolton and Brewster, where she identified a number of barriers that women who have gambling problems face and wanted to resolve those directly. And so I said, okay, that sounds like a good study, and she talked me into it. I have no qualifications to help her with that other than doing the research. I'm the research person. I will make her information available, so if you have clinical questions you want to know about, contact her. And also I have a thumb drive, a little flash drive or whatever they're called, to people who would like to a copy of her workbook. Unfortunately, she was only able to get, I think, 12 copied and made up before I left for the conference. But if you want it again, you can contact Roberta, and I'll make sure you have your contact information so that you can get a copy of her workbook. Now, as I said, she was working on a workbook that was tailored specifically to women, and based on her own research and extensive study that she had done. And she also wanted to do, this through remote treatment. So people who, because specifically one of the major barriers is being whether you have time to travel to a major city to get a treatment set up. So she wanted to do this by remote, by telephone counseling, by email counseling, by she also wanted to add webinar counseling to this mix. So the study is in two parts. The project was in two parts. The first part was just focusing on an evaluation of the workbook itself. And the second part was evaluating what value added, what was the value added by having a webinar for a group to meet the needs of group therapy. Roberta was the primary author on all of this, and anything that's brilliant that you see today is her stuff. Farah Jindani did the qualitative analysis, and I'm going to be focusing more on the qualitative analysis. And I did some of the quantitative analysis and got the grant and did a few other things. Women are not well represented in Ontario in problem gambling treatment. Only about 3% of Ontario gamblers have sought professional treatment for gambling. The number of gamblers in treatment does not mirror the number of problem gamblers in the general population. And Roberta is specifically interested in the idea that women face a number of barriers to accessing treatment, unique barriers that need to be dealt with in some way. She wanted to find a creative solution for some of the barriers. In her earlier study, this is a list of some of the barriers that women noted that keeps them from coming into therapy. Time constraints, money issues, mental health issues, safety issues such as the recognition of the problem, being recognized, confidentiality, shame, fear of judgment, and fear of total abstinence. That's something they need to work on, I suppose. In addition, 73% believe that they should be able to make changes on their own. Of course, that's a barrier to most people in the addictions field because they think they can solve the problems by themselves. So she thinks that treatment should be tailored to women's needs. And there have been a number of studies that have given indications that that women have unique needs in treatment. There have been criticisms of previous treatment that it's geared towards male gamblers, that there are gender differences in motivation, there are gender differences in gambling choices and patterns, and females felt safer and felt supported in female-only counseling groups. So she believes that there's a value to providing as an additional offer in the mix of treatment services available, phone and other types of remote counseling. It helps people express views and feelings more easily, equalizes the power relationship between the therapist and the client. It's cost effective. It's cheaper to run a webinar group than it is to run a in-person group. There's some electronic complications of scheduling and so on, but there are also some other advantages of not having to secure a room at a particular time and not having to get everybody together in the same place, physical space every time. Saves people on parking and travel. High levels of client satisfaction in her previous work with phone counseling, and believes that there'd be a lower attrition. So she developed a workbook that was focused on women's needs in counseling. It's based on work by Bolton and Brewster, 2002. It involved best practice materials from CBT, DBT, seeking safety, mindfulness, stages of change. It was based on her clinical experience and a number of other sources such as trauma recovery. There are 12 modules. It's women-sensitive, trauma-informed, and compassion-based. This is a list of the modules, so there are 12 modules. This could be done once a week. I'm not sure how she set it up in terms of the scheduling, but she had 12 weeks that would go through various topics, and these were all topics based on her own research. I can go through them if you want. First one was on just treatment, what is it, then stages of change, support, how to get support for change, gambling, hooks and traps, how it traps you, avoiding relapse, relationships and gambling, the addicted brain, thoughts and well-being, mindfulness, our emotions, stress connection, and review and next steps, soaring with the eagles. She's metaphors. She likes having a lot of figurative language in her ideas. The first module, I'm just going to go through a few of them, just some snapshots. As I said, it is available. I have a memory stick if you're interested in looking at the whole thing. The first one is a treatment, what's it all about? Is gambling causing problems? Identifying goals. They go over choice theory. They go over the CPGI to understand what severity level a person is at. Then they talk about behavior, and it's not necessarily good or bad, but they're about how you can lose control. And talks about the things that are under your control, which she uses this metaphor of front wheels acting and thinking that steer the car and give directions, and the rear wheels, feelings and physiology that can't be directly controlled but give drive. Then module 7 talks about the addicted brain and how the brain conspires against us to make us into addicts. Module 10, strategies with dealing with troublesome emotions, tips, depression, anger, anxiety, mindfulness, decreasing emotional suffering, tips on thinking and acting to maintain emotional balance, physical approaches, food and mood, containment, imagery and visualization, grounding, building positive emotions. So all these are dealt with in detail in the various parts of the modules, and it's actually quite extensive what she's put together. Then she has 16 tracks of mindfulness and stress management on a CD that was also provided to the clients. We did a pilot evaluation study. The part one was the workbook, telephone and email counseling only. So, and she's been doing telephone counseling for years now. So part one was just focused, primarily she was interested in seeing what feedback she would get on the workbook. Part two added webinar group counseling in order to give a group experience to the clients. I have some quantitative results I'm going to discuss. This is a description of the gambler's understanding of the benefits of treatment, some of the variables, and the vast majority agreed or strongly agreed that these various benefits in getting treatment. We did do an evaluation. None of these variables turned out significant. This is the workbook only condition. They were all they had positive effects, but not significant. For study two, this is I should have done the same graph. Well, the graph for study one looks almost identical to this. So just imagine an orange line, squiggly line, almost parallel to this. This is evaluation of the work. This is a feedback per group. It's based on 7 variables that have aggregated together, collected from each group, feedback on the effectiveness, what the perception of the clients from each group. And as you can see, that the maximum score here is 100. So across the board, the clients who participated in both the workbook group and the workbook seminar group had very positive feedback, very positive feelings about the group that they were participating in. There was no difference between the two squiggly lines, and they weren't quite parallel, but there was no overall difference between the squiggly lines. I just had time last night to put together the graph for group two, but it's really not different. For study two, we did get significant differences, a significant improvement in depression and in stress, but not in some of the other variables. So the first two variables were significant. Yay. I'm going to focus on the qualitative results, which my colleague Farah Jandani looked at. The women reported that they were learning new and valuable ways to deal with their gambling, acknowledge the influence that it had on their lives, and determination to change. Got some quotes here. I know that I have a serious issue with gambling, and I do want to change this. I am incorporating websites, mindfulness, stress, relaxation, and protective methods, such as not carrying money around to stay safe. So that was the first theme. There are 4 emergent themes. I should have said that first. 4 emergent themes that emerged from this. These were dealing with gambling itself. Improved coping. The second theme was improved coping. The women were beginning to identify and become more aware of triggers and urges to gamble. Reported learning to take steps to proactively change their gambling-related behaviors. At this point in my recovery, I find reviewing strategies and tools, especially on avoiding relapse, very beneficial. It helps me keep me vigilant and aware that I shouldn't take recovery for granted. Something that has to be continually worked at. So the idea that, and this is why they have their workbook after the program's finished, so that they can continue working at these. Then the positive psychological impact was the next one. Psychological impact on self-esteem, hope regarding the future, new coping strategies, social support from the group and program present events, I'm not sure what that's supposed to be, hope about the future and feeling that life in the absence of gambling was attainable. Taking steps to self-care, having greater compassion towards themselves. I found it was helpful to review how to be kind to myself, and that's a major issue that comes in the mindfulness. One of the things is basically self-kindness. It's a good reminder that I don't do it often enough. I am now taking time to rest, taking hot baths to relax. I took better care of myself. I am giving myself grace. And the fourth theme that came out of the qualitative data was positive changes were strongly linked with feelings. Decreased isolation. Positive changes were strongly linked with feeling supported by other women in the group process. Now, this did come in both just the tutorial part and the tutorial plus the webinar, but it was a much stronger theme when the webinar was present. And the webinar definitely was a major factor in helping women feel less isolated as a result of having that group interaction. It felt less alone in their addiction and in their feelings. One of the problems with the remote counseling, if you just did the workbook and just the telephone with the therapist, is that you don't get the group interactions. So by running the group via a webinar, it solved that problem, gave people that group support and that sense of having a community, peer-to-peer support, as well as as having the therapist there. I have a safe place to discuss pertinent issues connected to gambling. A group support and sharing was crucial to enhancing sense of wellness. Listening to other participants' stories and struggles reminds me I'm not alone. So the conclusions, the tutorial workbook was effective in supporting the women in making changes. The webinar added an additional layer of support for participants and were highly valued. Consistent with the current research findings, expanding services to Ontario women to incorporate self-help materials, phone access to treatment, and group interventions via the internet has clinical utility. There's a final revision of the tutorial workbook is something that she's hoping to work on. And then make available this online and in hard copy in the process. Which is in process through Problem Gambling Institute of Ontario. And she wants to establish webinar treatment groups for women on a regular basis and formalize a procedure for phone counseling. And that's basically it. Advertisements in newspapers, advertisements on the internet. I can't remember the content of the ads, but it was through advertising that the service was available. And then the person, they would get a contact email, contact Roberta by email, and then they do an email exchange. The assessment was done either through email exchange or it would be mailed a package, which included the workbook and some evaluation materials. The workbook would be actually mailed to the person each week for the groups. There have been a number of discussions in the literature about gender differences in terms of treatment goals, and some criticisms of the treatment. How extensive is? I don't know, but there has we are actually in another study looking into this right now. Anybody who would like a thumb drive, what do you call those little memory sticks, come up to me and I'll give out the ones I have. Oh, I guess you want to know Roberta's email. It's her name, Roberta period Bolton at camh.ca. I guess I should have put it on the slide. But it's her name with a dot in between the Roberta and Bolton and camh.ca. You can also contact me and then I'll redirect you to her.